One of the first things that, as far back as I can remember, was born in this little town called Khortytsa in southern Russia, which today is the Ukraine. And I remember this is a very small town we lived in. And I would go back, perhaps I was 9 or 10, I guess that's the first story. I can't recall anything earlier than that. Far back as I can remember, life was pretty good in the old days in Russia, in spite of the anti-Semitism that you hear about under the Tsar. In the early stages, we didn't really sense it so much. Of course, being born there, I suppose, with growing up with the Russian kids and that, my dad couldn't have been hampered by it too much, because he apparently has done fairly well. I never did know what his income was or anything, but there were seven of us children, and he had this jewelry store and watchmaking shop, the only one in town. And apparently did well, because we all had all we needed and all we wanted. And the oldest brother, Mark, was very rarely at home. I hardly remember him, because he's always in studying in pharmaceutical courses. I don't remember seeing too much of him, but he was very seldom home. Perhaps during holidays he'd come home. But outside of that, we didn't see too much of him, and I didn't get too close to him. The only thing I do remember about him when he'd come home was I was drinking milk and I was gulping it. Kid gets playing around, you get hot, so you get a glass of milk and you gulp it down. He says, "Don't ever do that again. Milk should not be gulped down. Milk must be drank very, very slowly to do any good." And I've never forgotten that. Never forgotten. And coming from him, the fact, to us, he was, within the medical circle, so to speak. That was holy. Since then I've lived by it. I don't gulp milk anymore. My father's father was a tailor. Him I remember faintly. I don't think he was that old when I was 12, but having worn a long beard. And this type of... On my mother's side, I don't really remember the mother's parents. I remember her brother. They lived in the larger city again. This is about the size of Winnipeg. The city was called Yekaterinoslav. We lived just 8 or 9 miles from the Dnieper, which is one of the large rivers in the Ukraine and Russia. And every Friday, mother would hire a horse and buggy and prepare sandwiches. And all the kids would get down, and we'd drive the 7 or 8 miles to the Dnieper River. And there were rafts on the river. And of course, you could swim right offshore, too. But the fun was to go beyond that. You see, I wasn't a swimmer, but the rest of the kids, some of them, like Dave and Fanny, who were older than I was, they would, of course, swim out beyond. And then every Friday night was like religion. We'd all go to bathing in the Dnieper, and then we'd drive home for Shabbos. And it was like a mikveh idea, And that was just, we used to look forward to these Friday night jaunts. And
so, who drove the car?
Your daddy? No. It was a hired
driver.
Yeah. No, that didn't go, because he was in the jewelry store. He was in business. The mother and the kids, and it was comparatively a pleasant existence. From the time as this, I remember, if I go back, and I was 8 or 9 at the time that we left. I know that the. When I was a kid, I used to hear the word "jid" a lot. In Russian, means Jew, and you got a lot of that. Of course, you get that here too, but you didn't pay much attention to it. It's the odd scrap and that. It wasn't, life went on, and it was just still pleasant. which, as I say, at the time, of course, at the, up the age of 12, when we picked up and came to Canada, came to Winnipeg, the old question always is asked, what the hell made you come to Winnipeg? It so happened that the Glasses were here. Mrs. Glass was my father's sister, and the families are very, very close together, so much so that you compare the ages of their children, the Glasses and the Dolgans, you find them within months, the same number and the same ages, so that the mothers were, or the fathers were, very, very close. The tragedy of our trip was, the tragic part of our trip was that the day we were leaving Russian soil from Riga, Russia declared war. This was 1914. Russia declared war on Germany. And the orders were issued that no male 18 or over was to leave the country. We got the news the day that we were boarding the ship at the dock. And as we were coming up the gangplank, mother and dad first, and of course Mark next, they sort of lined us up in ages. And when it came, they had the two officials at the top of the boat had the listing of the passengers, you see. And of course, Marcus, 18, Nazad, back. And they took him off the boat. He was 18 then. Took him off the boat and walked right down the gangplank, and then they let the rest of us go through. And that was the last we saw of him. He wasn't allowed to leave the country. Even though being a graduate pharmacist or whatever, apothecary, whatever he was at the time, they didn't do too much selecting in the army in those days. He simply was put him in the regular army, just regular army. He wasn't in any way connected with medical or hospital, though. And he was sent to the war. We came here. We came here in August of 1914. And, of course, the Glasses were in Winnipeg, so we went out to Winnipeg. And the dad started the watchmaking shop, firstly on where he could get along with his language, which was Yiddish only, and Russian. We started on Dufferin Avenue, and eventually we moved to Selkirk Avenue, where living, where you could shop and do everything in Jewish.
Dad came over first, I think, with Uncle Gershon, and then they brought the families out. Well, Dad was already married. He was married to mother's sister, you see, and Dad had two children, Vera and Wolf. And he came out and he brought his wife out, and he brought out mother and my grandmother, see, his wife's mother. And I think they lived with them. I have a hunch. No, I'm not sure. I have a hunch. I think that Esther, that's Wolf's mother, died in childbirth or something. I just know that mother was awfully young, because mother was married when she was... She was married between 15 and 16, because she was about 16 years and 3 months old when Cecil was born. And she was 17 and a half years when I was born. In fact, mother used to tell the story that dad used to come home. Mother was always, she was crippled, her sockets didn't fit in right. Her legs didn't fit into the sockets, yeah. So she always kind of had a limp or something, but Dad used to come home from, well, after he married her, he used to come home from work and find her skipping on the skipping rope, because she was still a kid, it's hard. I mean, we didn't realize it as kids, because actually Dad did all the running around. Of course, it was hard for Mother to get around, so, Dad did all the shopping for the house, and we'd take, if I wanted to choose, I'd take my father with me, Mind you, when I wanted something special, I had good faith in Mother's taste. I'd want a dress or something, she'd go shopping. But Mother would order over the phone. Mother found it hard to get around. So Dad, Dad was a good-looking guy. He was a good-looking fellow, well-built, tall, well-built, and very youthful. And Mother, on the other hand, was not, for her age, wasn't youthful-looking, you know. I mean, she had bright young eyes, but she was a heavy person. She looked older than her years. So, I mean, it wasn't noticeable. At least in our eyes, it wasn't noticeable. You see, he worked at home, and we used to stand beside his desk, you know. And when something happened, and I was, maybe he gave me, like, mind you, he had an awful temper. But I remember as a little girl, if I was crying about something, he'd sing a certain song. I wish I have the tune inside me, but I can't sing it. Don't cry, little girl, don't cry. Something like that he used to sing. You know, Mother never liked when I used to say Dad had an awful temper. But I felt I could see that with a clear conscience because I could like him in spite, you know, I liked him in spite of his faults. I mean, he used to. In our day, we used to go to boys and girls parties. It wasn't you go steady or anything like that, you see. And Cecil being a year and 3 months older than I am, we were in the same group. So we always went to parties together. So they didn't worry about me. But this was one party that Cecil didn't go to. And I was coming home with, Boris taking me home. Get off the streetcar, there's my dad waiting for me. He told the boy he can go home now. But on the other hand, one day I was coming home from high school. I was just, you know, I was kibitzing around with this kid from school. And we were hitting each other, I don't know why. Well, my dad saw this kid kind of hit me over the head or something. Boy, did he hit the roof. Did he give the boy, did he fall him out? And did he take me home in a hurry? And did I cry? I was so embarrassed. When I got home, I just was so angry, so embarrassed, because it was all in fun. Boy never hit me again, even in fun. Actually, I don't think he was a graduate architect or something. I think his, Wolf would know more about it. His father was, my grandfather was a builder. I know that when we were building our house on McRae Avenue, the foundation was laid by hand, the stones were laid by hand, and my grandfather supervised every stone that was laid. Dad had something, because Dad had some degree or something, because he sent all his tools. In fact, all his tools from Russia that he sent over for designing and drawing and things were lost, or he was naive enough to leave them with somebody and left money for him to send them on, and he never did get them. So he must have had some education or something. I really don't know too much. But must have passed some qualifications here, because he was considered, I think, the first Jewish architect in Canada. Not in Western Canada. And unfortunately, we've lost everything of his. I don't know where Cecil's supposed to have had it, and he's lost it. But they were able to find, it's in the archives, in the Jewish, where his certificate, or what is it, where he was allowed to also practice in Regina. So the irony of it is that in the archives is his certificate of Lincoln practice, but we haven't got it for Winnipeg. Remember when I was a little girl, my mother used to wash my hair and comb, make curls, and dress me up nice and clean for Shabbat in the morning. That I remember. But I must have been, I don't know, 6, 7, if I can remember. I guess, I don't know.
Shabbos was, with us it was anyway, Shabbos was quite a... It was carried through. As a matter of fact, there was no in those days. We kept our Shabbos, and my father didn't open the store on Saturday. It was closed all day Saturday, and everybody in the town, the village people in town, knew that the Dolgan store was closed. You couldn't get your watch repaired to buy anything, or that was it. And you prepared for Shabbos read about it today, or see it, see what it's like to prepare for Shabbos. And it was carried right through when we came here. We lived on Dufferin Avenue, around the corner from Besyankiv Shiel. And you know, it was Friday night, boom, we went to synagogue every Friday night, and every Shabbos morning we went to the synagogue. That's how we stood. And we sat beside our father. We started, there's only three of us, myself, Israel, Lila, and Lil. Four of us actually started school at the McRae. I was 12 then. And whatever punishment I got being called a Jid in Russia didn't compare to the embarrassment and the pushing and the kicking I got when I, at the age of 12, I went to grade 1 at the McRae school. Those kids used to pull my clothes. They used to kick me. And they used to laugh at me. No language at all. Not a word of English. Not a word. But fortunately, in Russia, we had a private tutor. Living in a small village, the most thing is a school, we had a private tutor come in. And I spoke good German, fair French, Russian, of course, and Hebrew, spoke Hebrew, and a little Yiddish. Fortunately, having these languages and having had also arithmetic and, you know, Russian geography and Russian history and that sort of thing, that I was, the teachers could see that I was much beyond where I was, except that it was just the time element. Until I was able to speak, and until I got the language, they were going to have trouble, and so was I. I had just had to live with it. Fortunately, I went from grade 1 to 3. When I got to grade 3, I was in the 1 year, the same year, they pushed me from 1 to 3. By the time I got to grade 3, I was just about able to get along with English, and the teacher called me up one time, and they were having an arithmetic exam, and I still didn't know just what she meant by it, arithmetic. So I went to the board, and I did some arithmetic questions, you know, minuses, pluses, divisions, and multiplications, and this sort of thing, and there again, I was beyond the grade 3, so they pushed me from 3 to 5. And once I got to grade 5, I'd been in school for 2 years by then. And, you know, and of course, I got a hold of the language fairly well, played with the kids and that sort of thing. And by the time I got to 5, the language was becoming less and less of a problem. And then they put me from 5 to 7. You see, and gradually I was catching up with the dumb ones anyway, age-wise. And because when I got to... in 3 years, I was 15 by then, you see, which was, I wasn't too far ahead at least. And then from 7, of course, I went straight to 8. It was getting tougher as I reached, because I had to get into subjects that you know, that were foreign to me as far as from Russia.
They sent me to kindergarten first. It was, it's on Stella Main, it was called Stella Mission. And we were all, that's all I remember, and we were all marching, and I saw some kids outside, and of course, it's always my business. I went outside to tell the kids to come in, and I got blamed for the kids being outside, or I got bawled out because I was outside, and I wouldn't go back, and so then mother started me school. I just remember that. No, it was just, you know, we were all, you know... No, we were marching inside, you see. I mean, the teacher had us marching inside. We were doing something inside. And I saw some kids outside. So I went to call them or something, you see. Like Dad says, I never know when to mind my own business. And I was bawled out or strapped or something, and I would never go back. I remember the year that we moved from Dufferin to McRae Avenue, and I was taking lunches there. So I used to play lacrosse with the boys during lunch hour. Oh, I know. We used to have, the Abilene School was strong, went in strong for these, these singing competitions they have every year, the music festival, yeah. So I used to go to the music festival. Anyways, once I was talking, I was kicked out. So, I don't feel that I could, if I sing beside a person who sings, maybe I can carry a tune, but otherwise I'm flat. Anyways, I was kicked out and I never went back. And then my music teacher told somebody else, you know, it's a shame, she was one of my strongest voices. And that always amused me. My mother never thought I'd ever reach to adulthood. Whole. When I was a kid, I jumped off two stories. Didn't you ever hear that story? He used to call me the flying machine. Yeah, I was about 11 or 12 years old. It's when we were living on Dufferin Avenue. We lived in a two-story house. And we had a balcony outside of the back room. And I was open. And the next door, there were some girls playing. And I said, oh, I can jump from here down, not realizing the height. So I jumped. And fortunately for me, it was just freshly plowed earth, you see, because I just judged for certain, and then I started to tumble. So I landed not too bad. And after that, they called me the flying machine.